episode 12 of The Upgraded Life with Scott Brown. In this show, you're going to hear us talk about mindset, of course, what it's like to be in a COVID-19 lockdown and how we can help those people around us. We're going to talk about cooking. We're going to talk about running ultra marathons. And we're going to talk about what Scott does with his project called Dev Chef, where he helps small business owners in the cooking and food industry take their ideas and bring them to market. Episode 12, here we go. Hello, thanks for tuning in to the Upgraded Life podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Nick Sotelo. The Upgraded Life is my personal project where I help people realize and reach their potential. I've been a professional helper for 20 years. Here's what I'm convinced of. The life that you have right now and the life that you want tomorrow is a product of your personal mindset, mission, and movement. Each episode of the Upgraded Life podcast is going to give you something that you can do as soon as the episode is over to upgrade your personal mindset. Your mindset informs your mission. Your mission tells you how to move every single day. And together, that is the upgraded life. All right, I am here with Scott Brown. He is a virtual friend of mine. I say virtual because we haven't met in person, but that will happen someday. But we have been connected for the better part of 2 years through a mastermind, and I'm just super excited and grateful to have Scott on an episode of Upgraded Life. And if you've been listening to the show recently, the last several folks that I've had on, we share a major thing in common is that we're all enduring this COVID-19 environment. So Scott, you're over in Nova Scotia. I'm in Oregon. That's got to be, what, 4,000 miles apart, you know, maybe a little over 3,000. Tell me how COVID-19 has been impacting your world. You're in a different country than I'm in. I'm in the USA. You're in Canada. How's COVID-19 been rocking your world up there in Nova Scotia?
Well, you know, I think it's pretty similar to everywhere. It's providing opportunities, I think, for people to show up in different ways. I think it's, you know, where you see people's characters and the best of people's characters and the worst of people's characters. But I think we all share that common stress and we all deal with it. We all deal with it in our own way. But I like to think of it that it's an opportunity. I mean, it's here, it's crappy, and we can't do much about it. But what we can do is focus on how we're going to get through it. And so, it's been, for me, it's been a matter of management, I guess. And I was talking about this morning. This is something I've kind of discovered lately is the management of energy, right? It's like I'm an infinite source, or sorry, a finite source of energy. I've only got so much energy within myself, physical, mental, emotional. And so how do I want to spend that energy? It's kind of like, you know, the energy beat the power bill for my house, right? I don't like seeing it go up every month. So how am I going to save some of that valuable energy? I look at it the same way internally is where do I want to focus my energy? I could spend all day looking at social media and watching the news and get, you know, probably 90% of it will be difficult and negative. And that's a fact. But I can't be consumed by that. I've got to take this as an opportunity to serve if I can, which is in turn release myself of stress and again manages that internal energy. So I guess that for myself, I've been trying to manage it in a way that serves me and serves other people. And it's just, you know, kind of simple things. I've been, you know, posting cooking videos for people, giving them ideas of things to cook at home and trying to add a little bit of humor to it and lightheartedness. I've been, doing little things like here in Nova Scotia, there's a big shortage of PPE, right? Protective equipment. And so I belong to a community of people who were sewing masks and gowns. So I've been helping deliver the materials to those people. You know, simple little things is when I bake bread, I make sure I get some to the neighbors and just checking in on people and just those little things that we're all capable of doing, right? It's just trying to manage it from that perspective. And at the same time, looking to see what opportunities can come out of this. And I know there's tons of opportunities that will come out of this without a doubt.
Yeah. It's those things that in our normal life, our non-COVID COVID impacted life that we say we're too busy for, right? Like who bakes bread and gives it to the neighbors anymore? Who's got time for that? You know, or we tell ourselves in our head, they're not going to want my stupid bread. So we don't even bother, right? And so it is those little things that we convince ourselves that, you know, we're too busy. We don't have time for that. And guess what? Mother Nature is telling you have time for it.
Yeah, that's a great point, Nick. And it's, again, it's provided an opportunity for me to think a little bit differently, because I made a batch of sourdough bread last week that it overproofed because I was on a webinar and it proofed too long. And so I made it, and they weren't the prettiest looking loaves, but I said, screw it. I'm going to take a picture and post it anyway, because it's going to taste great. They're just not pretty. And this morning I posted a video of a tart tatin, and when I went to flip it over, all the caramel spilled off the plate, right? And I said, my wife videotaped it, and I'm like, we can't do that. And then I thought about it, and I said, yes, we can, because that's reality.
Yep.
Just because I'm a chef doesn't mean everything I do is perfect, and I make mistakes like everyone else, right?
Yeah.
And so I think it's really given me an opportunity to judge myself less and just be a little bit more loose and free and easy and laugh a little bit more. I've been really silly lately, right? I've been talking about I'm going to grow a mullet in the back here and maybe a Kramer look on the top of my head, because it could be a while before we get a haircut.
Right.
So and it feels so good when you're just able to let loose, right? Mm-hmm. It's just a great stress reliever.
Sure. One thing that you said a few seconds ago that I really appreciated as well is, you know, I've been a helper for a while, and you know, when you kind of get classically trained to be a helper, you learn to look at things, you know, like how's a person sleeping, what are they eating, you know, diet, sleep, exercise, that type of a thing. But you know, something that I've added to kind of my normal assessment, just in any environment, any person that I'm working with, is a media diet. And so you mentioned that, you know, like 90% of what you're going to see on social media or mainstream news is going to be negative, and that's by design, and that's a fact. And I know for me personally, you know, the type of things that I was plugging into first thing in the morning on the drive to work, on the way home, it's things that I personally align with. I mean, I agree with it, but it was making me pissed off. I mean, I would start my day pissed off, and then I would come home pissed off, and I just had to realize it's not good. And so I literally just kind of shut the off button, and I'll check it out if I feel like I need to here and there. But so I part of my assessment when I'm working with people is looking at a media diet. And, you know, we take for granted how much we pump into our minds, you know, even, you know, again, there's no judgment, but this is a decision that I made for myself. So when Game of Thrones was popular and at its peak, I just chose not to watch it. And I don't, like I said, that's not a judgment, but I'm not judging people that did or that do like it, not at all. But the type of environment that I'm exposed to every single day is a corrections environment where, you know, we're getting exposed to, you know, violence and crazy stories. And I just decided I didn't need to pump any more of that into my head. Right. So I encourage people to really kind of look at the media that you're taking in, the books that you read, the movies that you're watching, the series that you're watching, because it'll take a toll and it will impact the way that you think about yourself and about the people in your own house, your coworkers. Has a profound impact. So thoughts on that, on media diet as something that we all should be assessing?
I'm with you 100% on that, Nick. And it's interesting that you brought that up, because 2 weeks ago, I was watching a live TEDx with Melissa Gilbert. She's the author of Eat, Love, Pray. And I like her stuff. She's really cool. And she asked this question, or she stated that, you know, the paradox right now is we're isolated, but are we truly isolating? Mm-hmm. And what she was referring to specifically was the social media and the news, right? So what are we isolating ourselves from? Mm-hmm. Are we isolating ourselves from the physical world, but filling ourselves with so much negative news? And how do we balance that? And so that's been top of mind for me, for sure, because I can fall down that rabbit hole that we all tend to do. One thing that my wife and I have been doing is, you know, when we want to chill at night, the Netflix has been a lot more lighthearted stuff. Like last week we watched Eliza Schlesinger's new, she's got this 6-part series, and she's a phenomenal American stand-up comedian, and really wacky stuff. The kind of comedy that makes you go, did she just say that? And so we just binged watched that. They're only 20 minutes, but we watched that for 2 hours. And that's exactly what we needed. And then we're watching more kind of family stuff, and really trying to stay away from the dark stuff because there's enough dark stuff right now. I don't need any more. And as engaging as it might be, I feel like we absorb that negative stuff subliminally, or I'm not sure what the right term is, but I think we take it in,
sure,
whether we know it or not. Mm-hmm. So I can definitely appreciate where you're coming from. Being in a challenging environment all day, you need a break from that, obviously, when you get home. And I'm with you with the Game of Thrones. I had never even seen one of them. I don't even know about it, but I heard about how addictive it was, and I'm like, no, I'm not going near it.
Yeah. In full transparency, I was a Sons of Anarchy fan. So I was watching that already. And so that was part of the reason, like, I already got this kind of, you know, has my attention. Maybe I'm addicted to it. I just don't need to add Game of Thrones on top of it. And so Sons of Anarchy was just as, was a violent show as well. So again, just know I'm not casting judgment on anybody. Just making a decision, creating a boundary for me based on what I assess as my limit at that point in time. So
yeah, same here. And Narcos has been one of my indulgences. And when COVID started, I had to kind of back off of it because it's a little too dark for right now. Maybe I'll return to it at a better time, but
it's human behavior, right? If you look at Netflix, you know, the top, you know, running shows, you know, what you're going to see at least a couple of weeks ago was Outbreak and Contagion, you know? And so I don't know if people were looking at it for like a glimpse of, you know, what to expect or what, but I thought that was kind of silly and funny and maybe ironic that those were the top running shows on the front end of this COVID thing. So,
yeah. And, you know, the other thing that Elizabeth Gilbert talked about a lot was empathetic exhaustion. And I could really relate to that because some of my dear friends are healthcare workers and they're so engaged in this whole thing, and they're trying to get people to stay at home, and it's just, that's all they're doing. Yeah. And I can see them getting exhausted. I worry for their mental health and their physical health. I really do. Yeah. And so I have to practice how to detach with compassion, right? To separate myself, and not to say it's not because I don't care. It's just I need to protect that part of myself because I can be highly empathic too, empathetic, I should say, as well. So I've had to really try to manage that. So I think one key word that's popped up in our discussion so far is really management. Like, how are we managing ourselves?
Yeah.
And it's kind of something you got to look at on a daily basis.
Right.
Some days are better than the others. It's like, man, yesterday I had a day in the morning where I just was so down and I couldn't get motivated and I had things to do. And so I just kind of had to sit with that and say, what's all this about? Mm-hmm. Right. It's okay that I'm feeling this way. show some self-compassion and self-love. And that's the other beautiful thing that I've finally gotten a little, not 100%, but finally over years and years and years, I'm really starting to give myself a break. Mm-hmm. And I said, hey, man, it's okay. Like, this is a difficult time. So what's in here that we can learn from? And basically the message was, is just, I was exhausted and I needed that time to just do nothing. And then 2 o'clock, I got a second wind and I went out for a run and it was all good. But I allowed myself to experience that.
Right. Yeah. That's wisdom there, right? That ability to recognize what's going on and then be able to pause and self-reflect and manage whatever the situation is. You know, I found that, because I work in an environment where I'm part of the leadership team and there's a lot of workers, there's, 300 plus employees from cooks to janitorials to what we call, line staff, just a whole, our own little kind of mini city, if you will, that comes to work every single day. And, we've heard some comments from, some of our workers about, they see us admin team and, we have bright affect, we're smiling, we're laughing. And, that causes folks to question, like, how can you be so, happy in a situation like this? Like, you could catch COVID, you could die. And, my personal initial reaction was to kind of be flippant about that, but it also kind of, brought to reality that, not everybody's in the same plane of, self-awareness, self-identity, management, routine, and just kind of being able to recognize, one of our mantras is meet people where they're at, right? And so not trying to kind of steamroll somebody's concern about this, but meeting them where they're at, being available to listen to, what it is that they're concerned about. How can I help that? But, at another plane, I mean, there's some of us that are, that got into this type of leadership because we enjoy the challenge. And there's nothing more challenging in my career that we've experienced than this. And so, that was something that caused me to kind of personally pause, because sometimes my, my positive outlook, so to speak, can be concerning to people, right? How can you be so positive when the world's ending? And that's just not the way that I view it, but I have to recognize that's the way some people are managing this current scenario, and to not be dismissive of it, meet them where they're at, lend an ear, support where you can. So that's what I'm seeing kind of in my work world there. So,
yeah, I can so relate to that because I used to be one of those people that would look and go, why is he happy all the time? Why is he so damn positive? Like, and that was a reflection of my own state. Mm-hmm. It had nothing to do with them. Mm-hmm. It was my own state. And I love that you're saying, meet people where they're at. They feel the acceptance from you if you meet them where they're at.
Right.
And so I volunteer at the Dartmouth Food Center, which is just down the road here. And it's in a very economically challenged area. Mm-hmm. And we have people coming in for meals on a regular basis. And that's exactly what we do. We meet them where they're at. We treat them with dignity and respect. We feed them great, nutritious food. And we smile and we talk to them. Mm-hmm. It's not like a lineup where you plop food on people's plates. It's
next.
Nicely presented. Yeah, it's nicely presented. Mm-hmm. We engage with them. And I know they appreciate it.
Yeah.
And it feels good for us to
approach
it that way.
Yeah, the look on your face when you describe it tells you it's the thing that you ought to be doing there. Yeah,
for sure, for sure.
I also want to circle back to just thanking you for engaging in the PPE effort, the personal protective equipment effort. If you're paying attention at all to any kind of media or news, you recognize that there's a global shortage of PPE, and especially in places where they have denser populations and hospitals and emergency departments, emergency rooms are having to care for not just COVID people, but then, the people that are coming in because of all other, normal, typical type of scenarios. And, you know, and I'm going to give a shameless plug or just a piece of awareness that, you know, what you don't hear in the news or the media is what corrections workers are up against, right? And we are facing the same shortage of PPE, and we're having to manage safety for staff in my system. We call them youth, incarcerated youth. And like in our scenario, I work in the largest facility in Oregon, and we had physical plant structure, although a bunch of it had been mothballed. It had actually been slated for demolition, but because of budget, we weren't able to demolish it. But we had to set up, you know, almost overnight, a quarantine living unit, a medical isolation living unit, and then a medical recovery living unit. So kids that were symptomatic and awaiting a COVID test would go to medical isolation. Once they became asymptomatic, then they go to medical recovery. And then any kids that were, that we could verify up to 48 hours prior had contact with a symptomatic youth, would have to go to the medical quarantine. Okay. So those are three living units that require round the clock staffing that didn't exist, that had to exist almost overnight. And it came down to like, what do we have for PPE? And we were scrambling. And right now we, our agency, we have, like 9 facilities in Oregon, maybe 11. I lose track now that I'm in the position that I'm in. I used to have to monitor the system wide. Now I just monitor one facility. So, but we're running out of gloves. And so then there's no, you can't buy gloves. You can't find them. All of our vendors are out of gloves. And so yesterday, part of our management effort was to count up all of our gloves, go through all of our living units and count up our gloves, because we may have to redistribute them to other facilities and whatnot. So corrections workers are up against it as well. Like when in those special units that I just talked about that we had to develop, well, if there's an incident in those environments that requires an outside security team to come and respond to, they have to have PPE as well, right? To come into the medical isolation, which is N95 masks, gowns, gloves, and that takes time to get that team suited up to be able to go in there. So the corrections workers, you know, don't leave them out of the mix, that, you know, we're essential and we're coming in and we're coming in every single day and getting, you know, potentially because we can't stop the intakes, right? I mean, the courts still are adjudicating kids and they're coming in. And so we can't stop that. And so they're coming in from all over parts of our state. And so far we haven't had a positive test, but we have had kids that were symptomatic with the flu. And so we were kind of on edge and on alert for a while, but anyway, just wanted to educate folks that corrections workers are up against it as well. So thank you for your efforts for getting PPE out there. It's necessary, and it's something that people can do. I mean, you really can do it. You can be engaged and you can make a difference.
Yeah, look, Nick, all it took for me was a couple of emails, an address. I drove to the address. She had it sitting outside her door. I picked it up. I delivered it to somebody else. She had a cooler sitting outside in her driveway. I popped it in the cooler, and that's all it took.
Yeah, absolutely.
It was a Sunday drive. Mm-hmm. And we all have the ability to do that. We just need to be willing to do it.
That's right. Blessings on you for that. Before we started recording and rolling, you were getting into a talk about being grateful for core values. So I'll throw that back at you. You know, what are core values to you, and how have they been helpful in this current situation?
Yeah. So I have what I call a being statement. And the being statement is, with spirituality and integrity at my core, I am curious, confident, and dedicated in my quest for growth. So there's basically 5 core values, mm-hmm. spirituality, confidence, dedication, integrity, innovation. And so I always kind of go back to those key things and say, is what I'm doing in alignment with those values? And it's funny because I have a list here. I was chatting with another friend and we were going to have a chat, a live Facebook chat about how we're managing through COVID. And it all goes back to those core values. So I had number one was here, and these are management tactics that I use. So number one, being of service. So being of service could be just staying at home when I'm supposed to stay at home. Mm-hmm. going out and serving someone when it's safe to do it. Number two was to have some form of movement, so exercise, mm-hmm. to get the endorphins running. I personally need that for my mental health, for my physical health, and I kind of take it to the extreme sometimes, as you know.
We'll go there, Mr. Ultra Runner. We'll go there for you pretty soon.
So the mind learns something new. So there's tons and tons and tons of free content out right now. There's webinars. There's a website called Pluralsight, which is offering free technical skills. So I'm learning Excel or advanced Excel, which is something I really should have. And do something comforting for yourself. And for me, it's cooking, right? So, mm-hmm. Cook something comforting, not every day because we want to be healthy, but cook something that maybe your mother used to cook, or just a real down-home recipe that brings you internal comfort and nourishes your soul.
What's that thing for you? What's that thing that you cook that your mother used to cook?
So, God, she was such a good cook, but she always made fantastic stew. Huh? And she used to make like beef stews and chicken stews. And my wife and I stopped eating meat, but she made one the other day with salted cod, which is an East Coast classic. And she made everything else the same, but she put salt cod in and she made this huge batch and it was phenomenal. It hit the spot, mm-hmm. like warm and comforting and simple, but nutritious as well. The other one is productivity. So something that's gonna make you feel productive that will in turn, boost your self-esteem. So is it, spring cleaning or getting to something that you wanted to do in the house that you haven't been able to do? And so, for us, we spent Sunday was a pretty nice day here. So we spent it out in the back, basically tilling up a new garden and just getting out there and getting our hands dirty. And the neighbors were next door doing the same thing. So, just something to make you feel productive. As we mentioned earlier, managing media and managing the amount of news that we consume. Number seven was being a social scientist. I'm typically like that normally, but I find it really interesting now observing people, not judging, but just observing people and how they're behaving. Mm-hmm. And seeing something different in a person's personality that you hadn't seen before. And sometimes that could be bringing out the best. And as human beings, we all have a dark side too.
Right.
And I have a dark side. I do some shitty things sometimes. Mm-hmm. And so it's just interesting to observe that. Innovation. I'm seeing themes within my communities of, more collaboration versus competition. Mm-hmm. So when we come out of this, will there be more of an appetite for collaborating mm-hmm. together? Whereas, in the past, we've always kind of, kept our trade secrets to ourselves. Mm-hmm. Our company is going to really collaborate more. And what we're seeing is, here in Nova Scotia, we're seeing food companies actually refit their machinery to start making protective equipment. Yeah. And there's a Stanfield underwear company that's totally refit, and now they're making face masks.
Wow.
And so that requires some collaboration because you got to reach out to mm-hmm. another company that would normally make that equipment and say, hey, how do I retrofit my manufacturing line to do that? So I think I'm hoping that will continue on.
I want to stop you there because, again, that's another thing where the media will, GM has been, highlighted for this and Ford's been highlighted for this, but there's a lot of, smaller grassroots companies that are doing the same thing. I have my neighbor across the street, she's in the biotech field and her company manufactures heart monitoring technology, the various implants, but they've stopped. They got the plans for, ventilators and they're cranking out ventilators. You don't hear that. You don't see that on the media or the news because they're not big enough to generate the buzz that media is looking for. But there's a lot of, like you said, your underwear company, it could stop production and almost like what happened in the Great World Wars, right? People were, collaborating more. And I don't know if it was you that posted it earlier. It might have been you, but talked about kind of post-World War II, 40% of the families had gardens or something like that, and now it's less than 1%. Was that you?
Yeah, I heard that on Rich Roll podcast week with Zach Bush. Mm-hmm. And I had to go and double-check the number again, right? I had to go back, rewind back to the podcast, and it was 45% after World War II, and now it's less than 0.1%.
Yeah.
Percent, right?
Right.
And that leads me to my last one, was self-sufficiency. I'm wondering if people are going to become, and I know you talked about it on one of your posts, Nick, about planning, mm-hmm. and how you're taking this time to think about planning should this occur again. Mm-hmm. It gives us an opportunity to think like, okay, have I planned well enough? And also, what skills could I develop? So I noticed, like here in Halifax, where I live, there's no yeast, mm-hmm. like baker's yeast. There's no yeast in any of the stores.
Same thing here.
So really?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So what's that telling you? Right. People are baking.
Right, yes.
And baking is one of the hardest things to do because baking is a little harder than cooking because it's an exact science, mm-hmm. and a lot of people shy mm-hmm. away from it. So that's really encouraging to see if people are actually starting to bake at home again.
Yeah. Yeah. The gentleman that I'm plugged into for sharpening my coaching skills talked about how you can't find, or it's hard. It was hard to find webcam equipment or things to set up, virtual meetings because it's all being bought out and sold out, and how, when we come out of this, the resistance or the barriers to doing things virtually is going to drop dramatically because people are going to have this equipment. They're going to want to use it. And what they used to perceive as a barrier, they're now going to become much more accustomed to it. And I'm seeing that in my professional field, being, a licensed marriage and family therapist, in the groups that I'm plugged into, a lot of people are forced to embrace teletherapy. And now you're kind of seeing people saying, it's not so bad. It's not like what I thought it was. And my clients still show up. And so that's another kind of outcome of this, that, things that we can do virtually in the way that we're going to collaborate based on, being forced to do it is going to be huge. Mm. So there's going to be a lot of good things that I think are going to kind of, come out of this, right? What do they say? Necessity is the mother of invention, right? And so here we are.
And on that innovation, there's no doubt in my mind, we are going to see innovations that we probably never mm-hmm. thought of before, because you don't know what you don't know. Right. And you don't know what you need until you need it.
Yeah.
And I saw something on LinkedIn 2 weeks ago where somebody figured out, they used a 3D printer and they figured out how to attach this piece to a respirator where now they could have 7 people feeding off of one respirator. Mm-hmm. We never thought about that before because we never needed to do it. So the hopeful and optimistic part of all of this is we're going to see some really cool innovations. And then my final thought that I didn't have written down, but it just came into my head, was leadership. Mm-hmm. I'm already seeing a lot of focus on empowering leadership, because if we have to start, so we've had to start managing people from home now, right? Mm-hmm. A lot of people are working from home. Mm-hmm. They're now using Zoom for their meetings. So those people that had to sit through shitty meetings because they didn't have good leaders mm-hmm. that could generate great, meaningful meetings, now those people are on a Zoom. And how are you going to stop them from zoning out on a Zoom, right? So you need to be a strong leader now more than ever, not just because of COVID, but if the world changes so that less people will go back to those cubicles or offices after COVID and they choose to stay home, they need great leaders, and they need leaders that are empowering. This control, command and control, it's got to go.
Right.
And I know you and I are on the same page with that. And I mean, you're obviously providing some great leadership in a very difficult environment. And I applaud you for that. I really admire that.
Thank you.
But I really am hopeful that we're going to see some great leaders, and people are going to be less willing to accept poor leadership. Sure. They're just not going to put up with it. And right. And so they should, right?
Right. And that's already a characteristic of, you know, the younger generations, right? They already enter the workforce with a much lower tolerance for that. And I think you're right that it's going to spill over into more and more of the workforce, right? And so,
and I know for me, the last 3 years, I really learned, I spent a lot of time working on leadership, and I belong to a community called the Exchange Community. And the Exchange Community is really focused on teaching great leadership skills. They're an extremely dynamic group. And when I started to tap into that and learn, when I can take my ego out of the situation and really empower my team, oh my God, I'm like, why didn't I do this years ago?
Well, command and control, that's why it was taught, right? Command and control. And that's a remnant of management that was necessary upon the Industrial Revolution, right? It was all about cranking out widgets. And the only thing that mattered was, you know, hitting your quota of widgets at the end of the day. And your best way of getting there is commanding and controlling, right? And unfortunately, that's what we call leadership. And, you know, in my state, in my organization, we confuse management with leadership all the time. And they're two different things. And, you know, all leaders need to have some management skills, but not all managers, just by title, are ready or equipped to be leaders. And that's a big problem. You know, it's a philosophical difference that a lot of people haven't wrapped their mind around. And I see it all the time, you know. So that command and control is, like I said, a remnant of the Industrial Revolution and cranking out widgets. And unfortunately, our times haven't really caught up to kind of, I mean, they have, right? I mean, if you look at the top echelon, you know, companies and what makes them successful, well, you're going to see that they've separated those two, you know, quite a bit. So, but yeah, that's why you did it, is because we were trained to do it, right? I mean, we were trained to view management and leadership as the same thing and synonymous, and they're not.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. So that's my hope for the future. I think those are 10 great things that I'm hopeful will come out of all of this.
That's awesome.
Because I believe in every adversity, there is always lots of great opportunities that come out. We just need to look for them.
Mm-hmm. And I love that you had a spontaneous one in the course of our conversation. Yeah.
This always happens with great conversations. I get these ideas. Yeah. And that's why, again, I think the other thing that's so important for me is I used to be an introvert, right? I labeled myself as an introvert. Mm-hmm. And I lean towards introversion, but now I call myself an extroverted introvert, mm-hmm. because I've opened myself up. And my wife, I have to give her credit for this, because I always used to say I suffered from social anxiety, mm-hmm. because I didn't want to go to parties. And one day I just kind of woke up and said, this is so selfish. I'm robbing my wife of great opportunities, mm-hmm. because I'm not willing to get out there and try. I just say I suffer from social anxiety. It's too much for me. And so I learned how to channel that anxiety into something more powerful. And so I started to go to the parties, and I learned that, hey, it's not as bad as what I was telling myself it was, right? And so I guess my message is, yes, we all lean towards certain personality traits, but I would say for me to be, I was open, and I would encourage people to be open, that you're not in that box. There are ways that you can poke through the corners, mm-hmm. of the box, mm-hmm. and discover more about yourself. And don't be scared to do it, because it's actually fun. We're all evolving. We're like that onion that has layers and layers and layers of it. And it's makes life exciting when you look at it that way.
Absolutely. And I align with that. You know, I think anything that I've taken official assessment wise, personality type, I come out introverted as well. And, you know, Western culture kind of rewards the extrovert. And so, you know, oftentimes we will learn to be more extroverted. And so keep that in under your hat too. Sometimes if you take one of those assessments and it says that you're naturally introvert, that's not a bad thing, right? But, you know, Western culture is trying to condition that out of us. But I love that part about you recognizing it as, number one, it's a label and it's a limiting belief. I have social anxiety, therefore XYZ all the time, rigid. Don't ask me, you know, I see it on the calendar, but don't ask me that we're going to, you know, are we going to this party and whatnot. And I love that you were able to see that as a point of selfishness, right? And that you're in this relationship with another human being, right? And that's the way I kind of personally am looking at. I've been married to my wife for, this will be our 20th year, right? This person chose to do life with me, right? It's their choice. And how have am I making good on my commitment, right? And so I love that you were able to kind of see this as a point of selfishness that was robbing your wife of an experience that she deserves to have.
Yep.
Yeah. I had a similar moment like that when we were able to sneak in. Nobody could have predicted this COVID thing and the way that it was rolling out. But we got a trip to Maui, and right on the front edge of this kind of being a global reality in the last part of February. And I'm not a dancer. I don't dance. I didn't dance in school. Just not a dancer. And I know that. And I didn't even dance at my wedding. And maybe I did. I can't remember. But it definitely wasn't. There wasn't a dance, you know. And so kind of sifting, or, you know, sinking into that reality that, you know, that this person, my wife, chose to do life with me. And therefore, what kind of a life are we living, right? And long story short, we were at a luau. We were in Maui for my son's 16th birthday. And we were at a luau, and it came to the part to where it was, you know, come up and dance. And, you know, I was like, damn it, I'm going to do this. And so I pulled her up, and I don't know how to dance, but we danced. I know it meant a lot to her, and there was, you know, significance in that moment. But
how did it feel for you?
Good question. It was in that moment. It was good. It was awesome. But then, kind of the fallout of it was like, you know, what, just trying not to, you know, be too critical of myself for why have I been so stubborn this way for 20 years, right? And then going back to that self-compassion and self-love that you talked about early on in our conversation, letting that dominate versus the self-critical. So I envision that there'll be more of those types of moments. I know that's something that, 'cause she talks about it periodically. Well, he won't dance, or he doesn't do that, or whatnot, you know? And so we all can learn and grow, and you can teach an old dog new tricks. So
I bet you really surprised her too, eh?
I think so. Yeah, for sure.
Oh, I love it.
Yeah.
I love it.
So all of you, you know, introverts that are listening, you know, it's okay. And it's also okay to stretch and grow. And like you said, kind of poke outside the box and see what's out there, right?
Yeah. And listen, like I said, I'm an extroverted introvert. I lean toward introversion. But at the end of the night, I'm socially exhausted.
Right. Yeah.
Right? I am socially exhausted because it's just not normally what I would prefer, but for me and my personality, I know if I stay too introverted, it's not healthy for me. I need to get out of my shell. I need to hear other people's thoughts, like this conversation.
Right.
And that's, you know, building those networks of great people and surrounding yourselves with great people has been so integral in my life. Mm-hmm. And if I would have stayed an introvert, I don't know, you know, if I would have labeled myself in as an introvert and stuck there, I don't know if I would have reaped these beautiful benefits of being connected to great people like yourself.
Yeah. Thank you. And that's where, you know, pop psychology has kind of done some damage here. So I feel kind of responsible to try to rectify that here if I can. You nailed it on the head. You're a smart guy and you've lived a full life. But introversion versus extroversion, it's more about how you naturally, I mean, one way you talk about it is how do you naturally recharge your own batteries, right? You talked about having finite energy early on as well. And so an introvert is going to get that balance and that charge by having alone time, right? If you don't have enough alone time, then it's going to drain your batteries. Extroverts need that connection with other people more than alone time, but they still need alone time as well, right? And so it's really about how do you, center yourself? How do you regain focus? How do you recharge your battery? And it's nothing more than that, actually, right? All the other things that get ascribed to that are the labels that society puts on it. And so again, if you ever find yourself taking one of those, personality inventories and it says one or the other, it's not right or wrong. It's not good or bad. It's just how you are wired as a person, right? And it all, you need balance, like, just like you said, So I love that label of extroverted introvert, right? And there's, introverted extroverts as well, I'm sure, that are out there. So,
and one thing that just popped into my head too, as you were talking, Nick, is that I think there's a lot of value to introversion, especially if you're a content person. A lot of people can't be with themselves for long periods of time. They need to be in a social circle, and not everyone, but I know people like that, and they're open about it to say, I can't stand being in my own company. I've got to be around other people. Yeah. And so one of the reasons why I love long distance running is I love that alone time. I love just being out there with my own thoughts. And I usually get great thoughts and very kind thoughts. I might start a run and be angry as hell, but by the time I'm done, I'm not angry or mad anymore. But that's that alone time that I so value. Yeah. And at the end of the day, think about it. We are all we have. If the whole world ended, I'm by myself, and hopefully I've done my work that I can manage. I mean, that will never happen, but we are all that we have, right? Absolutely. It's me in this shell.
So you went there. I think that's one of the things that's, for me personally, is fascinating about you, is the fact that you are an ultra runner. And so I want to hear about that. Tell me, your running story, your running timeline, so to speak, and how you got to be an ultra runner.
Yeah, sure. So it all started on New Year's Eve, 2009. I checked into a hotel room. I was very much an active alcoholic and drug addict, and my goal that night was to commit suicide. And so I checked in with a case of beer and a quart of whiskey and some sleeping pills, and I was going to plan to end it. And I woke up the next morning. I got too drunk, so I didn't end up taking the pills, but I woke up New Year's Day 2010, and this message came to me like, hey man, I had been sober for 13 years before, and then I slipped for 8 years, but this voice said to me, hey, your time's up. Here's one more chance. Are you going to grab it? And I know it sounds hokey, but it's the truth. Mm-hmm. And the last 8 months, this friend of mine, who is also he was a recovering alcoholic and also a chef, he was posting his story. He was training for an ultra marathon, and he was posting his story and showing his diet and his training. And I was just watching and watching and just admiring it. And so that morning when this message came up, something said, go out and run. Because if you go, and I rationalize it, if you go out and run, you're not going to want to smoke because your lungs will just be struggling. You're going to lose weight. I was 35 pounds overweight at the time, and this might help you to sober up. So I drove home. On that day, it was New Year's Day. I drove home and I tried to go for a run, and I could only go for a minute, and I'd have to walk. And went back and I just started researching how to run, like learn to run. I downloaded this program. It was a 5K. So 4 months later, I ran my first 5K. A month later, I ran a 10K. And then this lady at work got wind that I was running, and she said, we're running the Toronto Marathon in September. It was 6 months away. And we want you to come with us. And I'm like, I can't run a marathon. Wow. That's 42 kilometers. And she's like, here's the plan. You're going to come with us. And so I trained with her and another lady. And I ran my first marathon in September of 2010. I lost the weight. I quit smoking. And 2 years later, I actually got off of antidepressants. I had been on antidepressants for 12 years. And disclaimer here, I'm not telling anybody to go off antidepressants, sure. but my doctor at the time was very much a holistic doctor. And he said, well, you're running now and you've been on these for 12 years. How about we try to get you off? Because you're getting the natural endorphin mm-hmm. fix and the serotonin by running. How about we wean you off? And so we took a year to wean me off. And I've been off of them ever since. So seven and a half years, no antidepressants. So running kind of became my medicine, part of my medicine, not all, but my medicine for sobriety, my medicine for mental and physical wellness. And I always tell people, like, this is not that much about the physical for me. It's more about the mental. It's the mental clarity I get when I run. It's the mindset that I can get into to overcome challenges. So, and that's what got me into the ultra running. I got into running marathons, and then I said, how could I take this a step further and develop that mental strength to keep going? So I got into ultra running last year, and I ran my first one, which was 96K. And that taught me a lot about how to channel the energy in my mind. So when I got to a point where I thought I couldn't go any longer, if I felt physically okay and I wasn't going to put my physical body at risk, I always keep that in mind, not to be stupid about it, but if I felt physically okay, it was only my brain that was telling me to stop.
Sure.
So I developed this mantra that said, I'm a powerful motherfucker. That's I don't right. know if swearing yeah, is okay on here, but
absolutely.
Okay.
No, let it rip, right? This is
so reality. I'm a powerful motherfucker. Every time that happened, I would just continue that mantra. Mm-hmm. And I managed to get through this without overthinking. Mm-hmm. What happens in ultras is you can get to a dark place. And when you hit that, they call it the wall, right? Oh, like, mm-hmm. oh my God, why did I do this? What was right. I thinking?
Yeah.
All those self-limiting beliefs.
Right.
You have to stop those thoughts mm-hmm. or it'll kill you. Mm-hmm. It's gonna, mm-hmm. and so I learned just with practice of doing my long runs on the weekend, I learned to stop that message and replace it with, I'm a powerful motherfucker.
All right. Awesome.
And so I'm still doing it today. And if I ever get to a point where physically I'm at risk, I will stop for sure.
Sure.
But it's just proved to me that it's amazing what you can do when you literally tap into your mind power. Right. It's hard to explain. Like, it's very difficult to explain. It's something you kind of have to live.
Right. Well, that's my job, is to break it down and see how much we can get granular with it. So, so for those that are keeping score, so December 31st, 2009, January 1st, 2010, that day you went for a run and only lasted a minute, right? 4 months later, you did a 5K.
Yep.
Right. The next month you did a 10K.
Yep.
And then 6 months from there, you ran your first marathon.
You got it.
Wow. And then marathons weren't enough, right? And then how long was it between your first marathon to where you ran your first ultra, which, again, if I tracked right, is twice as long? As it's a double marathon, your first one?
About, the first one was 2.5, so right. 90. A marathon's 42, and this one was 96.
Wow.
Yeah.
How long was that from marathon to your first
ultra? I ran marathons for quite a few years. Okay. So I ran marathons for eight and a half years. I had always thought about ultras, mm-hmm. but the limiting belief said, no, mm-hmm. you can't do it. You mm-hmm. can't do it. And I finally got to a stage of growth where I started to believe in myself and learning how to stop those limiting beliefs. I call it the old broken record, mm-hmm. time to put the record away and mm-hmm. put on a new one. Then when I was 8, so it had nothing to do with physicality. It was all about the mental state.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So
when I work with people, part of what I do is try to help them find the source for the old broken record. I don't know. Did you do that? Did you hunt it down? What was that?
So I did. I did, Nick, and I did it in a rather unorthodox way. So I belong to a community of healers, and so one of them is an energy healer, and I did some energy healing with her, and it was a 2-hour process, and we kind of tapped into this idea that I was, you know, I had a lot of guilt around the relationship I had with my mother, and everything I was doing. You know, my mother's been dead for 13 years, but everything that I was doing was seeking her approval.
Mm-hmm.
And this was all really, really buried deep in my conscience until we talked it through. And then she helped me to realize, like, you know, when you were in your mother's womb, you carried a lot of her stress. My mother had 8 kids. I was number 7. Wonderful, wonderful woman. But she only had a certain amount of capacity with 8 kids, right? She couldn't spend time with us all. And so I carried a lot of guilt from that relationship. And she was able to kind of help me clear the energy around that. And that's when things really started to change. The limiting beliefs for me, they pretty much disappeared that day. They come back somewhat, but they don't
have the same space. Control. Yeah.
No.
Mm-hmm.
No. And then, so every once in a while, like every 2 or 3 months, I'll do an energy clearing with her. And it's kind of the same process. And then other things start to come out. But I think the relationship with my mother was the big breakthrough that came through for me.
Yeah. I'm familiar with, you know, with that. Obviously, I wouldn't have asked about it, right? But so thanks for sharing that. And you know, that's something that is very personal. And, you know, I applaud you for doing that work. However, you know, it was put in front of you. The way that I've learned to talk about that is the gift of love speech, right? I mean, you entertain those limiting beliefs and you give them room out of this devotion and love to this person, right? I mean, it's how you learn to maintain that tie to them. And so I've learned to, you know, I got trained to view that as a gift of love, right? Acting as if that person still exists, right? Acting as if what they said about you is true. Right. Or acting as you actually become that person. Right. And then that spills out in your relationships. Right. You kind of pass on that same type of contractual connection to the people around you as well. Anyway, so that's a technical explanation of it. But
you nailed it. Yes.
Yeah, absolutely. So
and then in doing that, the other beautiful gift that I got is it put me in touch with my intuition, which I never trusted. My conscience, intuition, whatever people choose to call it. But every time I had to make a decision, my gut, my intuition told me something.
Sure.
And it's not always easy to follow your intuition, but it's never served me wrong.
Right.
And I what I'm really excited about, especially in the last year, I've been following my intuition, and you made me think of it when you said you danced in Hawaii. My intuition sometimes will tell me to say something really funny or whatever, and you know, in the appropriate way, of course. Mm-hmm. And I'm generally not that way, but I've been acting really silly and goofy lately with people, and it's just lightens up the mood. Before I would say, oh, don't do that.
Right.
But my intuition, I get this gut feeling that tells me to do something. And when I do it, I feel great.
Yeah. Awesome. Well, again, I really appreciate you kind of going there with me, and, you know, hopefully that helps anybody that's listening, right? Because even though, like you called this as a unorthodox or, you know, non-traditional way of getting at the old broken record, you know, I say, whatever, do what works, right? Do what works. And so for those that are listening, you know, take what Scott said there, and if it speaks to you, you know, seek out your own path and your own source for that. But those old broken record messages, they have a source, that they do. And, you know, a big part of overcoming them, in my belief, in my experience, is uncovering that source and then making that choice. You know, do I want to continue operating this way? Or am I free now to make a different choice? And again, and I get that sense from you. It wasn't about, because you're very honoring in how you described your mother in that process and the reality of having a kid. So it's not about casting blame or being spiteful or whatnot. No. It's understanding the context, right? And making peace with that probably involves forgiveness, right? For for whatever that situation was, that other person, and for yourself. And just being free to make a different choice. You call it trusting your intuition, right? So I love that as well. So again, I appreciate you going there with me. So any other thoughts on that?
One final thing that just popped into my mind too is, so I talk about my sobriety. I had 13 years of sobriety. I slipped and then I kind of bounced around for 8 years, getting a, you know, a year here, 2 years there before I finally got hit 2010. But I think it was in the fourth or fifth year I was seeing a counselor. And she said, you know, Scott, my observation with you is you're a bit of an adrenaline junkie. You know, you drink, you steal, you cheat, you do all of these things. And I think you're hooked on adrenaline because it feeds your guilt, the guilt cycle. So she said, have you ever thought of maybe just finding a healthier source of getting your adrenaline fix? And I was in a bit of a fog at the time. But that day, that New Year's Day on 2010, it all came back. And so part of my adrenaline fix today is running, and I'm aware of that, and it serves a purpose. But I guess the message is sometimes when we hear things, if it doesn't resonate, it may come back to you at the right time.
Sure.
And it, for me, it definitely did. And so that's why I say it's so important just to keep an open mind.
Right. Just like you were talking about how the person that you were following with their own running story and journey, right? It didn't make any sense to you at that time. You didn't have any vision for yourself doing that. But at the right time, you're like, hey, you know, and so it's also the power of telling your story, right? And so, Scott, you've told, you know, a big part of your story here too. And so, and that's going to have a ripple effect. And so, I can't thank you enough for being willing and vulnerable enough to share that part of it.
If it does, that's great. I'm not attached to whether if it does or not, but if it does, that would make me feel great if it, if anyone resonates.
Yeah. You just never know, right? I mean, part of it is just being bold enough to go with what makes sense in the moment, right? And so you never know. You never know. So you have a professional part of your life there, right? And so just, you know, tell us what you're doing in your professional life and what kind of impact you're making in that.
Sure. So my business is called DevChef, D-E-V-C-H-E-F, so short for basically development chef. My background is as a chef, but I spent the last 18 years in product development, directing product development teams for a couple of large multi-corps. And then I left that in November and started DevChef. And so to make it really simple, if you ever had a great idea, particularly for food, because I'm a chef, but it could serve for anything. If you ever had a great idea and you said, how could I take this idea and develop it further and really get something to go to market? I'm the guy that can help you to do that. I can help you take your idea and really refine it, and we can test your idea. And if your idea tests really well and solves the problem for consumers, then we can then take that idea and I can show you how to manufacture it and get it to market. So that's what I do today. And I do it with a mix of larger corporate clients and then smaller startups here in Nova Scotia and different parts of Canada. I've got a corporate client in Italy and a couple in Chicago, one in New York. So
yeah,
pretty diverse.
Yeah. And I'm going to out you. And I know that, during this COVID, scenario, people's income streams are shriveling up and, there's people that are potentially looking at, closing up shop and businesses going away. And so I'm outing you because you have taken up an effort right now to start helping some folks, free of charge, pro bono, so to speak. And I think that that is awesome of you. And just want to recognize that that's the type of person that you are.
Oh, thank you. Yeah. Thank you. I mean, lots of people are doing it. And it's just the right thing to do. Mm-hmm. I believe in conscious capitalism, and it's the right thing to do at the right time. Thank you.
Conscious capitalism. I'll leave that one there because that one could keep us spinning for probably another 2 hours for sure.
Yeah. But,
I love that concept as well. If folks want to connect with you, Scott, how would they do that? How would they find you?
So on Instagram, I'm at DevChef. Also on Facebook, I'm at DevChef as well. Mm-hmm. And my website is www.devchef.ca. And on Twitter, I'm also DevChef. So yeah, pretty
all over the
pretty
place.
Easy to find me. Yeah.
I'll be sure to include all of those links in my show notes. And we are wrapping up here, Scott. And so what I typically do is ask my guests to, and you've already done it. I mean, you've done it in multitudes already in our conversation, but for, this is a mindcast or a mindset podcast, right? And maybe I just coined something there, mindcast, anyway. and you know, what I want people have invested, you know, a little over an hour of their lives into listening to this podcast. And so my hope is that when they, you know, when this is over, that they can have something that they can start doing right now, right? In terms of boosting their mindset. So what is something that you would offer to folks that are listening that as soon as they are done with this podcast, they can implement something right now to upgrade their mindset?
So I would say challenge yourself to be that onion with the layers. So what's the next layer of yourself that you can discover? You're not in a box. So push through those corners of the box and be open to the discomfort that might provide for you, because nothing grows in the comfort zone. So basically have an open mind. And if somebody says something that really irks you, for example, why does it irk me? Like, ask yourself those questions and be curious. And I know that's not one single thing, but I guess if I was to make it into a statement, it's have an open mind, wide open.
And a piece of that open mind is just looking at yourself one layer at a time.
Like exactly.
Yeah.
Like the onion, and I like visuals, and I'm a chef, so the onion works for me.
Absolutely. Well, Scott, I am really grateful that you came on. This was a fun conversation, and we covered a lot of ground in it. And you know, again, thank you for making time for this again in this pandemic environment.
You're welcome.
Yeah.
Stay safe, everyone.
You too. Thank you, sir. That was a great interview with a great man. I'm thankful to Scott Brown for coming on this show. I hope you got something out of that, to my listeners. Scott has lived a full life, and he's still living it to the fullest. I've just had the pleasure of seeing him interact with people, help people, show genuine care for those around him. And I really hope that came through in his words and the conversation that we had in this episode. So I want to recenter on his mindset tip, which was to envision yourself as an onion with multi-layers, and that growth and development and upgrading your mindset happens one layer at a time. So as you experience things that are not normal for you, that are uncomfortable, perhaps irk you, do what you can to take a step back, reflect on that, and see if that challenge is something that you ought to just take up and ought to embrace. See what you can learn from. So I love that metaphor that he used, looking at ourselves like a multi-layered onion and peeling through those layers to find out who we really are at the core. That's a great mindset, great self-development tip. So thanks, Scott Brown. And thanks to you, my listeners, for tuning into this episode of The Upgraded Life. If you got something out of it, be sure to go over to iTunes and leave me a 5-star review. You can also jump over to my website, www.nicksotelo.com, if you want to schedule some time with me, and I'll give you a free 30-minute strategy session. And keep looking at the website. There's going to be other resources for you, including a newsletter, including a blog, a lot of good stuff over there for folks who want to embrace the upgraded life, mindset, mission, and movement. Those three things dialed in is the upgraded life, and we'll catch you on the next show.